Big show for you here today. ESPN's Jordan Reed joins us to do another Mock Draft Monday. It is time. He gives us his five favorite player to team fits. We do a little Travis Hunter discussion off the top. Then he dives into a couple players that could be transformative for the Las Vegas Raiders and the New York Jets. And where does Jack Besh need to go? You guys know I love Jack Besh. He's got a great landing spot for him. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, April 14th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that is ESPN's Jordan Reed. Jordan, what's going on, man?
What's going on, man? I'm happy to be here. I believe this is our first time actually on the pod together. So making the big debut, and I'm excited.
Well, I think I actually had you on the show like three iterations ago, but this show has been through so many transitions. let's just call it that. Yeah. That it's hard to keep track, but this is definitely the first time I've had you on for Mock Draft Monday, which I'm really excited to get you on for this one because it's a fun series and you're one of my favorite draft guys out there. You know, you and I have been following each other for many, many years, so I'm really glad we're getting to do this. Reminder for the folks what Mock Draft Monday is. Mock drafts, you love them, you hate them, but they are a part of the draft cycle. And as Jordan knows, they get the eyeballs. So you got to lean into it a little bit here. But when you're making all 32 picks, or as I'm going to talk about here in a second, if you're a true sicko, and Jordan, we say sickos on this show with love. If you're a true sicko doing a damn 7-round mock draft like our guy Jordan Reed here, you don't love every single pick. Okay. They're just it's not possible. But there are a handful that stand out to you that just really make sense from a football standpoint. Like this scheme, this player, this team really makes sense. So what we get these guys to come on here and do is give us their five favorite fits from their most recent mock draft. Like I said, Jordan, you've got a 7-round mock draft coming out on April 21st. So we're going to dive into a lot here today.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to go through them. And the 7-round mock is one of my favorite things to do. I only do it once a year, and I love doing it, even though it is very tedious. But I'm a big studier of trends with the NFL teams, so I like to mock certain trends that I like to see or that I notice through each team and then try to match them with certain prospects as well.
Well, and it's also, I'm sure, helpful to kind of imagine it from a whole class perspective, right? Because everybody's obsessed with the first round, but as you know, like teams really are built and seasons are made on some of those like second round, day three type of picks. So I'm sure it's a helpful for exercise from that standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. It always helps, especially when you're trying to really slot these guys to certain teams and it's easy to cross off like that guy's probably not on that team board or, oh yeah, this team is going to love this guy right here.
All right, so let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. Let's get your first favorite player to team fit here.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to go in order with some of these picks. And the first one for me is Travis Hunter to the Cleveland Browns. I know this has become a really common mock draft projection. But when I look at the Browns offense outside of Jerry Jeudy and then David Njoku, there isn't a lot of excitement. And we know that if there's one thing Travis Hunter is going to bring to the offensive side of the ball, it is going to be that type of excitement. I've been studying your perceptions of him. And I mean, it's pretty much green throughout. And I think that's always a good thing when we're talking about a wide receiver, especially when we're talking about the branches on their route tree. There's so many different things that he can do. And then, oh yeah, he can flip to the other side of the ball and be a shutdown corner as well. So when I look at the Cleveland Browns, I think you need to add some excitement with a player like Travis Hunter. He can not only do it as a receiver, but also he can do it on defense as well.
Yeah, Browns fans are not super thrilled with Charles McDonald and I because we talked about on our wide receiver deep dive. Charles was just like, don't take this guy at two for only the selfish purpose of like a football fan, you know, like I'd love to see him in a more, let's just call it more settled offensive ecosystem. Now the Browns have signed Joe Flacco since we taped that episode that happened on Friday. You know, Flacco's obviously had success in that offense from when they were doing pretty strict Kevin Stefanski stuff. And I do think, man, like Travis Hunter catching deep in breakers off play action from Joe Flacco. I can get myself like 25% excited about that, man. So that's at least something. It's at least a little bit better than, in my opinion, Kenny Pickett. Like, I think we're getting somewhere with the Joe Flacco addition, but nevertheless, man, I'm glad that you brought this one up here, because it does seem like this is one that is going to happen. Tell me a little bit about just kind of your view on Hunter as a cornerback, because I know you're really high on him as what he can be as a defensive back. I'll talk about the receiver stuff, but as a defensive back, like, what type of prospect is he?
So, you know, just like I said, I'm big on trends and big on comps as well. And coming into the year, the only one that I really could compare Travis to was Champ Bailey when he was coming out of Georgia. That's really the only other college prospect that consistently had or averaged over 100 snaps, a game that also had production on the offensive side and then turned over to the defensive side and had really good production as well. So Champ Bailey is probably the most common comp that you see for him. There's been some other guys, Chris Gamble, when he was coming out of Ohio State, sure, one name. Charles Woodson is another that played some snaps offensively and, of course, really shined on the defensive side of the ball. But outside of those, there really aren't any common comparisons or relatable comparisons that we can use for Travis. But I think he's just such a special zone corner. That's really where you see his instincts. And what I like to say, he has a sixth sense for just finding the ball in the air. You can go back to the UCLA game in 2023. I think that was one of my favorites to study of him. The UCF game last year, where he's constantly baiting the quarterback before driving down the ball. So he has elite ball skills, but also zone instincts as well. The fluidity, the athleticism, I just think he's such a rare prospect.
Man, it's funny because so many of those skills, and I agree with you, man, even if he's drafted by the Browns, you could stick him in as like, if you, because I think he's gonna be a full time receiver if he goes to Cleveland. The way Andrew Berry has talked about it, like, they're gonna make him a wide receiver, which for me as a wide receiver guy, I am pretty excited about that part of him wearing a Cleveland Brown uniform, like him being a full time receiver. But you could stick him in. I think it's a little harder to conceptualize a full time offensive player, part time defensive player, than it is vice versa. It's just easier to imagine he's full time defense. You sprinkle him in on offense, but hey, maybe he's the slot corner on a few like critical down and distance situations, or, you know, your offense is, or your defense is, as Coach Prime has put it in certain interviews, like, your defense is getting their butts kicked and you're not going to have that guy on the field. Like, I don't think so. So I can sort of get there, but some of those traits that you mentioned as a corner really do translate to his wide receiver tape. I mean, I've mentioned this, his success rate versus zone coverage in reception perception is the second best of any Power 5 prospect I've charted, second only to Calvin Ridley. So like, that sense of zone coverage, you really see him operate in that way as a receiver, and the ball skills are just, I mean, freaking fantastic. Like, he has rare catching ability. So I don't know, man. Like, let's put on our hats here. Like, rookie year expectations for Travis Hunter. It's a murky year. It's a murky quarterback situation. He's with the Cleveland Browns. What do we think of a wide receiver from a production standpoint? Like, how excited can we be?
I mean, I don't think there's any ceiling that you can put on this dude, honestly. I mean, I'm expecting over 1,000 yards and, you know, I would say 8+ touchdowns. Honestly, I think he had that type of expectations early on. And yes, I know he's going to be fighting for targets with Jerry Jeudy and then also David Njoku. But like you mentioned, I think he can have a Justin Jefferson type of impact. And that's been a comparison that a lot of people have actually used for him from just like a fluidity standpoint and how everything just looks so easy for him, especially attacking the ball out of the air. So 1,000+ yards, like, that would not surprise me at all, just because if he steps into the situation with Cleveland, we know he's going to be the main go-to guy there. And with Joe Flacco, you know, if there's one thing that he's going to do, he's going to be a risk taker all over the field because he doesn't have anything to lose at all. He's on the back end of his career as well. So expectations should be super high for Travis if he ultimately ends up going to Cleveland.
Is there a quarterback for Cleveland that you think in this draft, like, you know, I don't know if you buy into some of the they'll trade back into the first round for Shador and pair him back up with Travis? Obviously, that's a little bit of a stretch, but maybe like a day two guy that you think would fit well in this offense.
That's a good question. I mean, they seem to kind of be intrigued with Jalen Milroe, honestly, just from like a tools perspective. I'm interested to see how the fit would be, just because he would be a little bit different than what Kevin Stefanski has had. But Tommy Rees, who's had experience with him in different stops, you know, he's had experience with Jalen. He speaks very glowingly of Jalen as well. So he has experience with him. So he knows how to cater things around his skill set. And like I've been telling everyone, if Jalen Milroe, if you're committed to developing Jalen, you have to go all in on his skill set, which would be a little bit different as far as the offense that Kevin Stefanski has ran you have to go to more of a run-centric, power run-centric type of offense with him, just because you want to incorporate his legs, quarterback design runs, and then mix in some deep play action as well, just because he's already one of the better deep passers in this year's draft class. He just has to clean up and refine the short to intermediate stuff.
Well, I would say even from a starting standpoint, man, like I think Jalen Milroe kind of throws those deep in breakers, kind of like a harpoon almost. Like he just pulls it back and like
it's a great
just
way to
goes
put it.
Straight. Yeah. And I think that can work as like we're making our big plays off that, and then we'll see how he grows and develops, and if he was to be drafted by the Cleveland Browns. But let's move to your next one here, your second favorite fit from your most recent mock.
Yeah, this will probably be a most common projection player and team fit, and that's Ashton Jeanty to the Raiders. That's one that makes a lot of sense to me, especially when you have a head coach that's about to be 74 years old at the start of the season. So he wants to get somebody that can come in and help him right away. And Ashton Jeanty is my fourth ranked player in this year's class. So he's going to have that type of instant impact ability. We've already seen them invest in Geno Smith already. They already have Brock Bowers there as well. And I think an underrated part of Jeanty's game is people forget about how good of a receiver he really is. He was so good as a runner last year with over 2,600 rushing yards. They just didn't need to use him in that facet as a receiver. So a lot of people really forgot about just how productive in 2023, how productive he was as a receiver. So I think that's an underrated factor going into him about his career. And if he does end up landing with Vegas, I mean, he's absolutely going to be one of their top options right away, just because they don't have anybody else outside of Brock Bowers really to go to in the passing game.
So I think this is maybe the third episode that Jeanty has been paired to the Raiders in terms of people's favorite fits here. So it's a common one that, like you said, people really do like. So we get to kind of pull on the same trends here. I'll ask you the two big questions I've asked people about Jeanty specifically, and specifically with this fit. First of all, just give me sort of like a ballpark. Ashton Jeanty compared to some of the other top running back prospects. I'm thinking, you know, Bijan Robinson's. I'm thinking like, you know, even back in the day, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, these guys, Saquon Barkley, these guys that have been high first round draft picks at the running back position.
So that's always an interesting question to me. And it's so hard to compare these guys just because the strengths of the class could be a little bit different. Like, for example, there's not a lot of elite or blue chip talent in this year's class. So he's going to go higher than what we saw, like, you know, Gibbs and some of these other players. I don't think he's on par as far as a prospect with Saquon and then also Bijan. But I think he's probably a step down from both of those guys. And of course, with Gibbs, they're definitely two totally different type of running backs. So it's always hard to compare as far as the playing style. But if we're talking about just where he is as a prospect, I think he's a step below than what we saw with Saquon and then also Bijan, who both were elite running back prospects. And, you know, a lot of people view Jeanty as a blue chip guy. I definitely think he's on the doorstep of being that. Just when I think of those blue chip elite type of running backs, I think of Saquon and also I think of Bijan. He's just not quite in that tier for me.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think he's like nearly as certainly as explosive as Saquon, but even Barkley, even Bijan, like, yeah, you know, there was just a different level of like pass catching versatility, I would say. I mean, I do think Jeanty's an underrated receiver. It's just he was averaging 7 yards per carry last year at Boise State. You typically think like, hey, my running back's giving seven yards per catch. Like that's a pretty good number. So it's just that's how efficient he was as a rusher. But I do think he is a competent like receiver, especially like when you're thinking like you're drafting running backs for fantasy, you want those guys to have the ability to play on passing downs and catch some passes. I don't think we have to worry about that with Jeanty. He's not just some like early down banger. The second question I would say for this specific fit, the only kind of like, I don't know, maybe devil's advocate I'd play here. Do you think that the Raiders, who obviously want to run the piss out of the ball, Jordan, they hired Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly. Yeah. Like they want to establish that thing. Do you think maybe they could build a better run game by taking, you know, an Armand Membu at the top of the draft here as your right tackle? Cause that's kind of the one position on their offensive line, I think is a weak spot. And then maybe taking a running back on day two of this kind of very deep class. Like, is there a devil's advocate theory to play there?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. And, you know, I've been talking to scouts over the past 2 weeks about, what would they think is the biggest storyline in this year's draft? Or what will they be paying attention to heading into it? And one of the best conversations that I had was, where do the running backs go, especially early on? And the scenario that he raised to me was, what seems to really have to value away heavily is, do I want to get Ashton Jeanty and a defensive lineman, or do I want to go defensive lineman and then take advantage of the stacked running back class. So it's just a matter of how highly graded do you have Ashton Jeanty, Amari'n Hampton, and do you see a significant difference in between, you know, those top three or four guys as opposed to getting somebody like a Devin Neal or a DJ Giddens in the third or the fourth round. So one of the biggest storylines really to watch and what I'll be paying close attention to is, do teams feel comfortable waiting, you know, really to get these guys in the third and the fourth round on their draft board in this running back class? Or do they go ahead and get a guy like Ashton Jeanty or Amari'n Hampton or Travion Henderson, Quinshon Judkins, somebody like that? So just how early do these running backs go? And then also, do these teams wait? Just because I have 32 draftable grades on running backs right now. Wow. And this class is very reminiscent to me from just a depth perspective of 2017. And if you remember, we got 30 running backs drafted in 2017. That was the Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook, Aaron Jones. That class was absolutely loaded. So this class, it doesn't have a star power at the top like that class had as far as getting two guys to go inside of the top 10. But as far as the depth, I can make a strong argument that this class is deeper than 2017.
Man, Chris Carson was the seventh round pick that year, and he had several big years for the Seattle Seahawks. Do you have, maybe not a seventh rounder, but do you have like a favorite kind of, you know, quote, sleeper name at the running back position?
Oh, it's Breshard Smith. I'm sure you've seen me talk about him on Twitter or X or whatever you call it nowadays, probably every single day this week. So he actually was a receiver at Miami for a few years, and then he transitioned to running back during his first year at SMU, and he looked completely natural at doing it. I mean, he's running in between the tackles, he's running outside, and then also they're using him in the pass game, of course, with him being a former receiver. He looks very natural doing that as well. He reminds me, I know it's crazy to say this, he reminds me of Tyrone Tracy from last year. Like, they're literally the same size, very comparable. I think they're going to go in a similar draft range too. He probably ends up going the fourth or the fifth round. I have a fourth round grade on him, but I think he ends up going in the fifth round. He ran into 4.3s at the combine, which is outstanding for him as well. So just the versatility that he has, I think somebody's going to get an ultimate weapon with him.
Yeah, I love the Tyrone Tracy comp as you were talking about it. It's like that was, I was thinking about it before you even said it, because Tracy was a converted receiver and I thought he was much more polished as a runner than he got credit for in last year's class. And obviously, again, this is the type of back we should care about. Like, he has passing down versatility and is a little bit more of a nuanced runner. And this is how deep this running back class is, man. Charles McDonald and I did two episodes on the running backs, and I don't think we talked about Smith because it was just we miss it. Well, you know what? I'm going to blame Charles, bro. He's the one. I'm just hosting a little podcast, okay? He's doing like the big board. He really should have. I'm gonna throw him under the bus because he'll never listen to this. So there's that. But all right, before I throw any other coworkers under the bus, let's get your third favorite fit here.
Yeah, so we just talked about him, and it's Armon Mew to the New York Jets. I'm a big fan of this fit, and I think the Jets have done a great job this offseason just because they really haven't forced their hand at all. And what I mean by that is, getting somebody like Justin Fields that really doesn't take you out of the quarterback race for the next 2 years, in my opinion, and you don't rush yourself into getting a quarterback. So you take the offensive lineman, who I think is one of the cleanest prospects in this year's draft class. And what I mean by cleanest is that he's been great throughout the pre-draft process, had an outstanding combine performance. You can turn on the tape of any game of him last year. He only gave up one sack. And then they have a huge need at tackle right now with Morgan Moses now gone to New England. So you pair him with Olu Fashanu, you continue to build up those trenches. I think he's a great fit for the Jets.
Yeah. Speaking of coworkers here, when I had your coworker Field Yates on the show a few weeks back, this was one of his favorite fits. And I'll say the same thing that I will say the same thing to you that I said to Field, which is Membu is such a great prospect because if you don't like people out there watching this show, listening to the show, if you don't like watching offensive line play, you're going to like watching Armon Membu because he is so aggressive. The movement skills, I think, are fantastic. Like, he is truly a tone setter and an ass kicker, man. And I really loved this fit when Field laid it out. I still love it because this, to me, it speaks to, when you talk about trends, like, look at the way the Lions built their team. Aaron Glenn coming from there, Tanner Angstrand coming from there. They just like, oh yeah, we've got a good tackle. Who cares? Like, we're going to take another badass here in the top 10 and continue to make that unit of strength. You go Olu Fashanu, you got John Simpson, Joe Tippmann, Elijah Vera Tucker at right guard, and then you stick Membu at that right tackle spot. I Aaron Glenn saying that they want to have a running back by committee and being a run-heavy team, and, you know, we'll see what that actually ends up meaning in terms of, like, how much – Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis eating into Breece Hall's workload. But it was I would have bet, maybe not my mortgage, but I would have bet something pretty close that he was going to say he wanted to get all three of those running backs involved at some point, because this is another team that's just screaming at you, man. We want to run the football extremely well. And I do think Membu helps them do that.
I mean, you have to look where he came from. Like you mentioned, he came from Detroit. And for whatever reason, all defensive coaches, the one thing they want to do is stop the run, but also being able to run the football as well, just because they know the one thing defenses hate and what makes them panic is when you're able to run the ball right down the throat. So it's not surprising to hear him come out and say that, especially, you know, they have a really good trio, in my opinion. I thought Braylon Allen really shined when they allowed him to play. We know Breece Hall is really good when he plays as well. And Isaiah Davis was somebody that I was a huge fan of when he was coming out of South Dakota State.
This is why I respect your running back evaluations, and that's why I asked you about the sleeper running back, because you kind of have a good sense for these guys. And yeah, man, like we were talking about this, the producer and I, before you hopped on. Like sometimes in fantasy football, it's just like, hey, just draft good players from good teams, you know. But other times, I do think there are value situations like this Jets offense where they're going to run the football extremely well. I like the vision overall, and you know, Justin Fields being a part of the run game is a huge part of this equation as well. And you really only have one guy that's going to demand targets here in Garrett Wilson. And when you can get a receiver that's going to have like a 30% target share of a run heavy offense, there can be some real efficiency there, especially when there's not that many wideouts on the field. So I don't know. I'm not saying the Jets are going to be a good team next year, but for maybe the first time in like, I don't know, 6 years, 7 years, I'm at least interested on Sunday to like check out their offense and see what it looks like. And Membu being a part of this would be huge. This is, again, another repeat one, but I think is a really fun fit. Okay, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to get some more of Jordan's favorite fits right after this. All right, we're back. Jordan, let's keep it rolling here. Give me your fourth favorite player to team fit.
So I'm going to give you one that's a little bit off of the grid that you probably haven't seen, and that's Travion Henderson to the Commanders.
Whether that's
at 29 or at some point in the draft, just because I look at the Commanders' backfield right now. You have Brian Robinson, you have Austin Ekeler. Both of those guys are on the final year of their contract. And when I think of a Cliff Kingsbury offense, he's somebody that, you know, he always likes that dynamic back that you can do so many different things with. And when I look at Travion Henderson, I think he's one of the most well-rounded running back prospects in this year's class. I mean, he's the best pass protector in this year's class. He's one of the best pass catchers. He can run in between the tackles. He can run so many different things on the perimeter as well. His biggest hangup has just been durability, but he was able to stay healthy this past season. We saw that 1-2 punch of him and Quinshon Judkins. If you can use him as that change of pace type of running back, I definitely think there's a huge role for him in the NFL. So pairing him with that banger like Brian Robinson to where he can be that change of pace back in Cliff Kingsbury's offense, I think it's just a match made in heaven.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah was on the show last week, and he sent Travion Henderson, or just talked about an ideal fit for him could be the Chargers, because he could basically bring them what Ekeler did from a run-pass standpoint a few years ago. Well, here he just gets paired up with Ekeler and maybe is just the younger version of that for the Washington Commanders. This fit rules, man. I mean, this is really fun. Also, by the way, like, doesn't every offense need a Travion Henderson because of everything you just outlined there? Number one, like, explosive plays are the name of the game. He's going to bring you explosive plays. And what's the number one job of the running back? Like, number one, it's to run the ball, obviously. But, like, don't get the quarterback killed. You know, pass protect. And obviously, Jaden Daniels is the guy that if there was ever like a down moment from last year, was after that injury. So that pass protection stuff here for Henderson is a pretty big part of the equation.
Yeah, without question. I mean, you could put a highlight reel of not only his runs, but also there's probably a 3 or 4 minute highlight reel out there somewhere of him just stepping up in pass protection and just mauling guys. That's something that's very rare to see, especially when a running back prospect is coming out as high caliber of him.
Talk to me about kind of his ability as a receiver, because I think you could throw him screens, and this offense loves to throw screens, but is he a guy that could develop into like a, I don't want to give the Jahmyr Gibbs comparison, but like somebody that still think Gibbs has been a little untapped in terms of his ability as a route runner with the Detroit Lions?
I think there's definitely some untapped potential there, Matt. And I say that because they really tried to limit his touches because of the durability from a receiving standpoint. They really wanted to utilize him as a rusher. So I think there's some untapped potential there with him. Now, is he going to be like, you know, Alvin Kamara, Jahmyr Gibbs? He's not going to be that caliber. But I think, you know, you can give him some routes out of the backfield. He creates some mismatches against those wide receivers, those linebackers, and those nickel corners as well. I definitely think you could put him in some advantageous situations like that. So they really limited his touches as far as a pass catcher during the beginning portions of the season. But when they got in the playoffs, I mean, he had that explosive, I believe it was against Texas, where he had that long catch out of the backfield right before halftime. So that's a little bit of a preview as far as what he can be on the next level. And I think if you trust him to stay healthy, you don't have any questions about the durability, you can give him a bigger workload that includes some catches out of the backfield.
I love this one. I think this actually is my favorite one that you've laid out so far, just because
there we go. I love it.
I've said for a minute, man, like Commanders running back, it's I'm not going to say it's a screaming need, because I think Brian Robinson and Eckler are good players. But if you just look at their run game last year, in the first half of the year, and this is always classic, not the first half stuff, but like Cliff Kingsbury always has a good run game. You can say whatever you want about the pass game in Arizona, and some of the stuff in Washington was, I think, a little hit or miss, but he always has a good run game. And in the first half of last year, really like the first three quarters of last season, their run game was extremely efficient. But in the final month of the season and then into the postseason, I mean, they could not run the ball very well at all. And I think they just need another change of pace here at the running back spot. So this might be a spot, Jordan, where, you know, on draft day, people that want to take Travion Henderson in like their dynasty leagues might be sitting here like, oh, damn it. Like he's blocked by two guys here. But by the end of the season, when it's, hey, let's go try to make another NFC championship run, Travion Henderson's the lead back for the Washington Commanders.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And, you know, just going through my most recent mock draft, I just gave you guys one pick with that preview right there. But I'm definitely going to slot him at 29 to Washington, just because, as you mentioned, I love the fit so much.
There we go. I think he's a guy that's going to sneak into the first round at this point. That has been my suspicion at this stage of the proceedings. Let's get your fifth and final favorite fit here.
Another one that's a little bit off the grid, but as I'm going through these players and just matching them with teams that I think they just scream as far as being a fit for them, is TCU receiver Jack Betch to the Rams. Like, he is exactly their type. He's a great run after catch guy. He can go up and climb the ladder and be really good. I think he's aced the pre-draft process. He was awesome at the Senior Bowl. I think he was the best receiver there, in my opinion, the most consistent one there. He blocks his tail off in the run game as well, but he just has a lot of qualities that they have looked for from some of these, you know, third, fourth, fifth round receivers that they have drafted in years past. So Jack Betch to the Rams is one that I'm going to continue to slot him at in every single mock draft that I do coming forward. And then also whenever I talk about him, I'm going to mention the Rams just because he's so perfect for them.
Man, Jordan, I don't know if you've seen the reception perception report on Jack Betch, but I freaking love this guy. He is one of my favorite receivers in this class. I didn't really know too much about him, obviously, other than the, you know, tragic situation with his brother and the fact that he led that 2021 LSU receiving team in catches that year. Mm-hmm. When they had a bunch of NFL players on that roster, including Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. It was literally all I knew about him when I went in to chart him. And I was just blown away by how good this guy is, man. Like, as a route runner, obviously he's not going to bring you much deep, but as a route runner, he's there. He consistently never gets brought down by the first defender. And I mean, he just is so Rams coded, like, as a receiver, man. So I had been saying, Jordan, he should be the 36th overall pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars, because obviously Liam Cohen comes from the Rams. James Gladstone comes from the Rams. They emphasize these tough, physical, like, kind of singular receiver types, where he's gotten the Cooper Kupp comparisons, he's gotten the Puka Nacua comparisons. I actually think his reception perception prospect profile is actually pretty similar to Chris Godwin. It's always funny, dude, when somebody that subscribes to my site points that out, and I was like, I didn't even think about that. Like, yeah, actually, as a prospect, no, the charts are actually pretty similar. But you're just taking him, hey, don't, like, forget that, forget the knockoff version. You're just going straight to the source, send him to the Rams here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a perfect fit. As you mentioned, he's so Rams-coded. He checks every single box that they have looked for in years past. And, you know, they need some help at receiver right now, maybe in that third or fourth slot right now behind Nacua, and then also Devontae Adams coming over. So he could be that young guy that can play on the slot or even spare either one of those two on the outside when they're not in the game.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that they are still going to want to be 11 personnel heavy, and I know that they they paid Tutu Atwell. And McVay had a quote a couple of weeks ago or something where he's like, yeah, I really have underutilized Tutu Atwell at this point. It's like, I mean, I think we're getting the most out of a 150 whatever pound receiver. You're doing pretty well. I know they paid him 10 mil, but he's mostly there to be kind of like a conceptual addition to the offense. Like, we're stretching defenses out, we're opening things up for other people. But if they want to be 11 personnel, like, you can line Davante Adams as your backside X receiver, and you can have Puka Nacua just working in concert with Jack Besh, very similar to the Cooper Kupp dynamic here. So, like, this isn't a spot, Jordan, where Jack Besh is going to catch like 80 balls as a rookie or anything, because there's two true blue, like, tier one studs there at this point. But in a couple of seasons, he learns the offense. And, you know, Cooper Kupp wasn't a guy that was immediately winning triple crowns. He kind of came on a little bit. And I really do think there could be a similar developmental path here.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I would be shocked if he's not very high on their board. And then also the Jaguars as well, as you mentioned. And one trend that you noticed, like I said, I'm a big studier of trends. With the Rams, they always take guys that are ready to play right away.
Yeah.
That's at the top of their prerequisites with the draft picks that they have selected in years past. And, you know, that's why their draft classes are so good and they hit the ground running, because all these guys that they bring in, they're pro ready right away.
Do you think Besh is like do you think he's more of a second rounder or third rounder type of guy? Like, not just how you view him, but where you think he might go?
That's a great question. I think he'll probably end up going in the third round, but if somebody takes him like mid to late second, I wouldn't be surprised either, just because he's so well rounded and ready to go right now.
Yeah, Cooper Kupp, third round pick by the LA Rams. So the comparisons just keep rolling in here. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, we're going to get Jordan's stand on the table prospect right after this. All right, we are back. Jordan, I'm going to say it. You've been crushing this episode, man. And not just because you really leaned into like two things. I mean, you started off with Travis Hunter, wide receiver talk. It was a good way to get it started. But, you know, leaning into Jack Besh at the end, I love me some Jack Besh. But all right, it is time now for you to stand on the table.
Well, Captain, my captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson.
We have Bills Mafia here.
Let's go!
Jordan Reed, who is your prospect you want to stand on the table for? I know you got a table there in the background at the ESPN offices. Maybe don't get yourself into too much trouble here, you know, breaking company property. But if you want to, I wouldn't say no. It'd be good for YouTube. But regardless, who is your stand on the table prospect this draft season?
Yeah, I'm going to have my Brad Holmes moment, like he drafted Penei Sewell.
That is exactly what this segment is based off of. And I do think, hey, Jordan, at some point, I don't know if you know Brad at all, but you maybe need to get in his ear and say, like, hey, buddy, you need to, this draft season, you need to really bring, you need to break the freaking table, okay? Because, like, he had the James Williams moment, he had the Jahmyr Gibbs moment. Last year, he was thumping on, you know, the table a little bit. We need to see that this year.
Yeah, I'm just telling him to go Buffalo Bills fans on them and just break through the entire table. But, you know, I was going to say Travis Hunter, but we've talked about him plenty already. And one player that I'm a little bit different on, or a little bit higher on, I should say, than a lot of other people, is Walter Nolan out of Ole Miss. He's actually my number 12 overall player. I just see Ed Oliver when he was coming out of Houston. He's a little bit bigger than what Ed was, but as far as he can be in those sub packages, those obvious passing down situations, I think he can be a Kalijah Kansi type of guy really early on in his career. And as he continues to gain weight and he gets more durable against the run, that's when he turns into an Ed Oliver type of player. He's just a wrecking ball in the middle. He has what I like to call explosive power. You can turn on the Wake Forest game. You can turn on the Georgia game. There's so many opponents of where he was able to show off that explosive power. And when I'm thinking of guys that came into the league right away, the name of the game is being able to rush the passer. I can teach you to defend the run and take on double teams, just because we can improve your strength and we can, you know, we can pack on those pounds on your body. But rushing the passer, that's something that's very hard to teach. Mm-hmm. But Walter Nolan has that walking through the door. Now, as far as where he's going to go, he has a wide projection. It wouldn't surprise me if he goes as high as the 49ers at 11. But if he's still there on the board for the Eagles to take at 32, I wouldn't be surprised at that either, even though the whole league probably would be kicking themselves if he does fall to the Eagles at 32. I'm just very high on him, and I think he's going to be a terrific player on the next level.
Man, this is a great one to bring up for this segment, because like you said, there's not only, I think, a wide draft range for him, there's a wide range of opinions from like evaluators, man. You get some people that really are in your camp that think he's an excellent pick and like you can really see the vision. Other folks kind of have those questions. So why do you think there is sort of that wide range of opinions here?
I think some of it is just some things that happened during his career as far as like mm-hmm. off the field stuff and things like that, you know, but on the media side, we can't really worry about that just because sure. we don't have, you know, the requisite information. Teams obviously have all that stuff. But if we're just talking about the player on the field, that's why I'm so high on him, just because, once again, the name of the game is being able to rush the passer. And even if he can't play in early down situations, we know in sub packages, those passing downs, he's going to be able to come in and have an effect along the interior one way or the other, just because he's so explosive. He was up to 300 pounds at his pro day. And, you know, I actually was at Ole Miss pro day and his face, he was so happy when he stepped off the scale. And the scout said 300 pounds. So that just goes to show you that he's fully committed as far as who he wants to be on the next level. And I just don't think, as far as just from a playing style perspective, there's just any way you can leave him off the field, especially in those obvious passing downs.
Yeah, I mean that's the name of the game, disrupt the passer. Do you have a team fit or a system that you'd like to see him in?
So there's two teams I would love him on. One is the Minnesota Vikings. Brian Flores getting his hands on him. I think that would be a tremendous fit, especially with the versatility that he likes to use with those defensive linemen. And they already have two guys in the middle that can take up those early down snaps, and John Allen, and then also Javon Hargrave, and also Harrison Phillips as well. So he can be that true sub-package guy early on in his career. And then with all of those guys being over 30 years old, eventually he'll go on to be a starter, you know, the third or fourth year of his career. And then the other obvious one, I touched on it already, is the Philadelphia Eagles. I think he'd be a tremendous fit there, especially with the veteran-led locker room that they have already. Them losing Milton Williams and sliding him right back into that spot, I think it's a perfect fit.
Yeah, just with the how he did it again, you know, memes would be all over your timeline at the end of the first round there if that did happen. And it does make a lot of sense, man. You know, they always want to double, triple down on those trenches. And he obviously would bring a lot of what Milton Williams just took out of the door with him. So that one particularly makes a lot of sense, especially if it's a guy that's just slipping a little bit. They have no problem. I mean, obviously, Jalen Carter went a lot higher in the draft, but a very similar situation where there's some off the field questions, things like that. We got the culture in the locker room to take the chance on those guys. And look, Jalen Carter, he's winning a defensive player of the year at some point in his career.
He is that tier
of a player, and he's a dude. Maybe Nolan doesn't become that, but he could be a huge hit for them. So I really like that fit. Jordan Reed, you've been a great fit on this podcast, which is no shock, of course. Tell the people what you're working on as we head up to the draft, what you're going to be doing draft day. You've been crushing it this draft season, man. So what do we got working here?
Yeah, so I have my 7-round mock draft coming out on April 21st. I'm sure you guys, everybody that's listening, you'll agree and love every single pick that's in there. My prospect rankings, my final 400, top 400 big board, will be out next week. And then also we're releasing Buzz Files along with my colleagues, Phil Yates, Mel Kiper Jr., and then also Matt Miller, just stuff that we're hearing in the league as well.
Man, 400 players ranked, 7-round mock draft. Jordan Reed grinding his ass off here for ESPN over there this draft season. So I appreciate you taking the time, man. Thank you for joining. Again, make sure you check out all of Jordan Reed's work. You can follow him on social media at Jordan_Reed. Do not confuse him with the old Commanders, the old Washington tight end either. But appreciate you doing this, Jordan. Keep crushing it. That is going to do it for today's show on Tuesday. The Ringer's Danny Heifetz joins me to continue our Teams That Shape the Draft series. We're going to look at the teams that we just can't quite figure out. Until then, we are out.